And we're back. It is the Taylor Report. By the way, we're on Facebook, / The Taylor Report, and we are on SoundCloud, Taylor-Report. And you can write to us, The Taylor Report, at CIUT.FM. I finally remembered. But I think we're joined now by journalist Eva Bartlett. Are you there, Eva?
Hi, Phil. Yes, I am, and I'm so sorry about last week.
That's okay. We created a kind of, urgency about it. People said, we got to have Eva on. What happened? So, it's sort of that sort of, the thing where you indicate that somebody's coming and you get the crowd ready. So we have the crowd ready, and now we have you. By the way, you don't mind if I call you Eva Kay, because I notice to follow you on Twitter, and I hope people do, it's Eva Kay Bartlett, right?
That's right, yes, and also on Facebook. On Facebook, it's actually my full middle name, Eva Karine Bartlett.
Yeah, and of course, you have the ingaza.wordpress.com, where your writings are available. I hope people are following them closely. I want to say, by the way, before we ask you about Mr. Vyshinsky, that we really do appreciate how brave you've been and how able, and if we have benefited so much from your writing and your work and your ability to get into places that a lot of people are afraid to go. And you've done work in Gaza, but in, especially Syria. The body of work is tremendous and very helpful to, I know our listeners really do appreciate it. But you've done something also very special now. You have obtained an interview with Kirill Vyshinsky, and my understanding is he is with former chief editor of RIA Novosti, and he has been arrested as of last May by the Ukrainian government. And I suppose you must have had two objects here, one to learn about who he is and what his work was, and let the world know, but also that this is a Russian-Ukrainian journalist who has not been getting the kind of support that many journalists can expect when they have problems around the world. Am I right?
Absolutely, yeah. And he is—he was born a Ukrainian national, and he got his Russian citizenship also in 2015, something that he was public about, although the scant articles that have actually bothered to report on him back in May 2018 kind of made it out to be this big secretive thing, the fact that he had also had Russian citizenship. But I myself was not aware of his case until I was approached by a journalist named Vladimir Rodzianko, who was trying to garner support precisely for the reason that nobody is really aware, aside from journalists in Russia and some in Ukraine, are aware of this case. But if the situation was reversed and this was a journalist being held by Russia, his name would be well known. And there's actually an example I was just looking at today. The guy is a Ukrainian national, and Amnesty International went as far as to create a campaign, a very flashy campaign about this man being held in Russia. Mm-hmm. And there certainly might be basis to this campaign, but then I went and I searched Amnesty for the name of Kirill Vyshinsky, and I didn't find any hits. And I did various renditions of, transliterations of his last name, and even just use his first name. I didn't find anything on Amnesty International. And just out of curiosity before our interview tonight, I again just searched his name, various renditions, on Google, just to see if there had been any other reporting on him. And by largely, the reporting I found has been Russian media, mm-hmm. A couple of articles I've written. And there was one Deutsche Welt and one LA Times article around the time of Vyshinsky's arrest. But it was that both of those were heavily slanted with the kind of Russophobic lexicon, mm-hmm. assuming Vyshinsky's guilt. And I did copy it just so I could cite from it. The Deutsche Welt one, although granted this was at the time of his arrest, but they didn't seem to have followed up on the fact that, as they said, he would be charged with treason for his, quote, subversive reporting. Mm-hmm. To justify, quote, Moscow's annexation of Crimea. However, he's been held in detention without trial since May 2018. So neither, to my knowledge, neither Deutsche Welt nor LA Times, which also reported on his arrest, initial arrest, have followed up with the fact that he's basically being held like Palestinians are in Israeli jails. He's being held in the equivalent of administrative detention. Mm-hmm. And with his case, every month or two, his pre-trial detention is prolonged, and mm-hmm. he still hasn't had a fair trial, any sort of justice whatsoever.
Yeah, it's amazing that they actually... they've allowed the impression to develop and that he's, they say, not a journalist. He is a journalist of some, he's a chief editor, but also he's been working there for a long time.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that people were saying he wasn't a journalist, but you're correct. He was the chief editor of RIA Novosti. Mm-hmm. And the thing about, now the interesting thing about this case, so he's being charged with high treason, or he's been accused, I should say, of high treason against mm-hmm. Ukraine. And the basis of this accusation is based largely on 14 or so articles from 2014 and one article from 2018, none of which he wrote. They're all articles that he published on the website, and as he said when I interviewed him, by the way, the interview with Kirill Lyshinsky was by email. Mm-hmm. I haven't met him. Mm-hmm. He pointed out, I just want to make sure I don't get this wrong. He said all of these came with a caveat, you know, the standard editorial caveat that you find on most opinion sites.
We have it at CIUT, the performer of the show. These are the opinions of the person producing it.
Exactly, yes. I mean, and as you know, I contribute to RT. And every one of my articles is followed with the RT caveat, you know, something mm-hmm. like the views don't necessarily reflect the views of, you know, the news outlet.
Yes.
And so all of these articles that Lyshinsky published on the site, none of them were his own, and they all came with that caveat. And furthermore, he said, from the vast number of texts that were published in the spring of 2014, the SBU, the Secret Service in Ukraine, picked only about 15 that they deemed, quote, treasonous. They simply ignored other texts with other views posted on our website and accused me of conducting, quote, special operations. And so he said, what does the fact that I impartially let people speak in support of Maidan or against Maidan have to do with special operations, which he was also accused of? So essentially what he's done is he's published a number of articles, none of them his own, mm-hmm. Having dissenting views and pro-views pro the so-called revolution and views against. Mm-hmm. Views pro the People's Republic in the southeast and views against. Views pro the referendum for Crimea and views against. So he's basically done what a journalist does.
He sort of counted the paragraphs and the lines. I think he indicated that there were those who would be supporting Kiev were actually, in terms of the number of paragraphs, they had more than those who were opposed.
Yes, that was in reference to the issue of the church and whether or not, I forget the terminology for this, I can scroll down in my interview with him and find that exact terminology, but whether or not the church would become independent, the Orthodox Church. And you're right. He said that, there it is. The term I was looking for is autocephaly.
You're the only person that could pronounce it. Congratulations.
I worked on that quite a bit, actually. but you're right. He said in the article in question, this is the 2018. So as I mentioned earlier, the articles that are used against him are 2014 articles. But this one from 2018 was about this issue. And as you correctly noted, there was more pro the Ukrainian stance than anti. He said, in it, the view against autocephaly takes up 11 lines, whereas the case for it is laid out in 17 lines, and he's being accused of conducting a special operation against the Ukrainian independence of the church. So, the whole issue of what he's being charged with is so ludicrous. Mm-hmm. In fact, when I was just getting notes together for this, I came across an RT article, and it cites the Ukrainian prosecutor general, Yuri Lutsenko, who posted at the time of Vyshinsky's arrest, he posted photos taken during the raid on his home and office. And the RT article goes on to say some were obviously meant to demonstrate his links to Russia, like his Russian passport. Mm-hmm. But Ukrainian officials acted as if this was not on public record, but it was. A couple of awards and ribbons. And so this is some of the damning evidence, in addition to the articles that he did not himself write, that, that the Ukrainian secret, you know, service and authorities have against Kirill Vyshinsky.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Eva K. Bartlett, and it's ingaza.wordpress.com. He raised it in the interview with you, and I really hope people go to find this online. Just write Eva Bartlett, and you will find it. But he raises the possibility that he has also been caught up in the politics of Ukraine at the moment, particularly the elections. That this is convenient for Mr. Poroshenko to be talking about. Oh, you see, I've caught a Russian agent or whatever. And that he suggested it's a fairly cynical exercise.
Yes, and in fact, just 2 weeks ago, I went to Kiev and I interviewed Vyshinsky's lawyer, Andriy Domansky, and he completely agrees. He's been following. He knows Kirill Vyshinsky very well. He's known him for years, and he also reiterated that same line of thinking because in Kirill's reply, he said, quote, "My detention and arrest represent an attempt by the Ukrainian authorities to bolster the declining popularity of President Poroshenko in this election year." He goes on to say, "From the very first hours of my detention without a trial and even before pretrial restrictions were set for me, high-ranking Ukrainian politicians started talking about the need to swap me for a Ukrainian convicted in the Russian Federation." And then he went on to say that prisoner swaps are a favorite kind of way to gain popularity in Ukraine.
Yeah, he gave that as a kind of a tip of what was the real thinking in that the kind of people he deals with, I guess prison officials, police, if they're using the word swap, that's really what they believe it's all about.
Yes, and now Mr. Domansky, the lawyer, he said, you know, you can't even discuss a prisoner swap. Kirill hasn't even gone to trial. He hasn't been in prison for anything. He's in detention. He's in pretrial detention. But he hasn't actually been convicted. He hasn't had a trial. Mm-hmm. You can't. He was talking about the legality of even discussing these prisoner swaps because it would be with somebody who is convicted in Russia.
Yeah, he did. Mr. We're speaking about Kirill Vyshinsky. He doesn't even have what we tend to in courts here we call disclosure. He doesn't. He hasn't been able to look at what they claim evidence is, right?
Yes, and that's. I'm glad you mentioned that. I wanted to make that point. So. When I met with Mr. Domansky, we were I recorded the interview, and he had to pause to take a phone call. I'm just scrolling down to make sure I get this. Yes. So basically, he got a call from the court in Kherson, southeastern Ukraine, where Kirill's hearings are held. And so when I met him, this was February 19th, and there was to be a hearing on the 21st, a pleading. I'm not sure the nature of that. But he got a call on the 19th saying that during the 21st hearing or pleading, that the court would limit the time during which both he and Vyshinsky could read the case files. Now, the case files are enormous. He said there are 31 volumes, and each volume is between 250 to 400 pages front and back, plus there's approximately 80 hours of video footage. And the only time that Vyshinsky is able to review these case files, to read them, to know what he's being accused of, and et cetera, is when he's taken to court. He can't read them.
He can only do it while at court.
Yeah, he said, I'll quote Mr. Domansky. He said, Kirill Vyshinsky is brought to SBU, the Secret Service, quarters at 10 a.m. and returned to his cell at 5 p.m. And at times he has to start reading at midday or 2 p.m. only, or he can't review the papers at all. Mm. So he's being limited in reviewing the papers, and this is an obstruction of justice, one amongst many, mm-hmm. in this case against him.
Mm-hmm. And we got to remind again, people are not speaking out so far, very few. I think, by the way, your article is very valuable. It will break the ice. I think a number of people will see it who were not aware of Kirill Vyshinsky and the fact that he's a longtime editor at Novosti and finds himself being, you know, in held since May 2018. It's going to take a lot of publicity, isn't it, if we're going to eventually hear anybody say anything, at least in what we call the Western world, who will ask, is this right? Is this fair? And why do we have positive relations with a government that will do this to someone?
Oh, that's a very good question. I mean, I intend to become a lot more informed on the goings-on in Ukraine, but I'm aware of the very basics that what's been happening in Ukraine is over the last 4 or 5 years is kind of the furthest from democracy and democratic practices that one can imagine, and yet Canada is a staunch ally of the authorities in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, on the note of Vyshinsky's case, his lawyer, Domansky, his home was raided in January, and he said that he had been in the U.S. Raising awareness about oppression of journalists in Ukraine, and he'd been also, I believe it was in Brussels, mm-hmm. And then he was actually in Kherson for a court hearing when his home was raided, mm-hmm. and it searched his apartment and an assistant, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. And he said also, I asked if he'd been threatened directly. He said, I'm paraphrasing, that he hadn't been threatened directly, but he got a call. Let's see, he said the general prosecutor's office keeps on calling, questioning his clients, asking, trying to incriminate him as a lawyer, trying to basically make his clients not trust him, mm-hmm. trying to implicate him as being a Russian stooge or something. And it was actually really interesting when he talked about his own clients. He's defending clients who are pro the so-called revolution in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. He has a variety of clients, and it's not with one particular political affiliation, but essentially they're trying to discredit him, mm-hmm. and make him lose support. Now I'm going to paraphrase. Yeah, he said, The general prosecutor's office tries to deal a blow to my reputation so that I lose clients, because no one would like to hire an attorney accused of ties to the criminal world. And he also kind of feels that they're trying to launch a case against him, the lawyer, so that he can't defend Kirill Vyshinsky. Now, I'm reading from my notes, by the way, Phil, from the interview with him. And this interview, like the interview with Kirill Vyshinsky, will be on Mint Press News, which is the publication.
Mint Press, it will be coming up.
Yes, mm-hmm. I've been kind of juggling a number of things, but it should be out in the coming couple of days.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Eva Bartlett. And, you know, there is one thing we do share that with this Kirill Vyshinsky is that there's a funny language that's starting to work its way into all the media here, which is accepted, this, because they say, well, we're in a new Cold War. So now, there's a term, information war, and as though we're to be partisan. Somehow or another, I mean, Mr. Vyshinsky is accused of being part of information war, and folks like yourself, folks like the Taylor Report, all the independent journalists, we're finding ourselves that people, they want to use this adversarial language. It kind of works as a demonization, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, and it's actually become incredibly childish, because no longer is content argued against. It's always in recent years it's character smears, and like you said, demonization, the use of these invented terms like Russian bots, mm-hmm. Assadist in the case of Syria, referring mm-hmm. to the president of Syria, I'm sure, like myself and colleagues, I'm sure you have also come under fire for your mm-hmm. reporting on issues, on current issues, mm-hmm. and reporting that doesn't happen to coincide with the vast majority of corporate media's reporting, which is essentially parroting and echoing one another in their rhetoric against the country in question, whether it's Syria or Venezuela. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, in many instances, attacking people who dare to ask questions or mm-hmm. put forth a different narrative based perhaps on actually going to the country in question and interviewing people rather than relying on the Atlantic Council, for example.
Yes. Yes. Someone I will not rely upon. Again, it's Eva K. Bartlett on Twitter, and it's ingaza.wordpress.com. In the interview, you did it by email, Kirill said to you that he thought he was part of the, you know, that the election had had something to help in terms of his custody or chance for a break in the case. My understanding is that the election is March 31st. It seems to be a kind of a comic situation. Literally, there's a comedian who has more is expected to do better than Mr. Poroshenko. There are all kinds of political games, but do you have any sense of that? Do you expect that when this election is over, maybe there will be sort of a new direction taken with this case?
I really can't predict, but based on what Mr. Domanski said, he feels for sure that we're already now very close. We're only a few weeks away from that election. He feels that nothing would be resolved prior to it. And that certainly Vyshinsky is a card being played by the Ukrainian authorities. But I couldn't say, you know, whether after the results of the election, whether finally they would allow him to have fair trial or not. I suppose that will depend on whether or not more associations, you know, supposedly to protect journalists, actually take an interest in the case of Vyshinsky. Mm-hmm. I found it interesting. There was a kind of a meme going around. I think it was around New Year's, at the beginning of the year, and it was showing. Well, it was actually the meme was appropriate, I should say. It was based on a Time magazine cover showing a number of journalists and talking about, you know, freedoms or of journalists or, you know, of suppression of journalism. Mm-hmm. And the appropriate meme was that Kirill Vyshinsky's face should have been on there because he's been in prison for so long now. Mm-hmm. But there have been some associations that have at least have an entry on Vyshinsky, like the Committee to Protect Journalists. It's not a strong entry, but they do have an entry at least on him. And the International Federation of Journalists does have a somewhat strong condemnation, saying we are alarmed by the raid of the offices and the detention of the head of RIA Novosti. And they urge Ukrainian authorities to let journalists work freely. It's still not as strong as it would have been if the journalist in question was being detained by an enemy state.
Sure. But. Well, Eva, and your articles lead people to these. Our listeners can find these petitions, sign them, and support Kirill Vyshinsky. I know you're going to continue to follow that, and we're going to see an article, I think you said, about, is it your interview with Domanski, the lawyer?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're looking forward to it. Eva, you do great work. It's great to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much, Phil. You do as well. And I'm really appreciative of the platform that you offer listeners in the Toronto region and on the Internet.
Well, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. That's Eva K. Bartlett, Twitter, and ingaza.wordpress.com. We're on Facebook / The Taylor Report, and we're SoundCloud, Taylor-Report, and you can write to us, the Taylor Report @CIUT.FM.